Welcome to your interactive lecture for week 10, Working with Sources. In your readings, you learn why we cite and how we quote, paraphrase, and summarize sources. In this lecture, we'll review the main points of the readings, deepen our understanding of ethical citation, reflect on our citation practices, explore how and what to cite when writing blogs, and learn how to write effective links. So let's begin by testing your knowledge. Before we start, we'll review the main points of the readings. If you didn't get a chance to do the readings, go back to Chapter 10A now. So I will read the question and the potential answers, and then I'll talk about the right answer and why it's right. Question 1. When should you quote? A. When the quote is complicated and you don't understand it enough to paraphrase it. B. When you want to avoid plagiarism. Or C. When the author's words are important or you want to do some sort of analysis. So the answer is C. So when you put words in quotation marks, you're basically passing the microphone to another voice. And there should be a reason why that voice needs to be in there in that way. So maybe you want to do some analysis on the quote. Maybe this who said it or the way that they said it is really important. But if you're just interested in the ideas of the piece, then that's when you would probably paraphrase. Question 2. True or false? If you change some words in a sentence, it's not plagiarism. True or false? This is false. And the reason is that if you take a sentence, so let's say I take a sentence that is maybe a bit complex and has a lot of dense ideas, and I use a thesaurus to find something that means a similar thing. So maybe if the piece says students and I change it to learners, that is still considered plagiarism because you still use the sentence structure of somebody else's work. And more importantly, when your teacher is reading your work, they're evaluating how well you understand the topic. So paraphrasing is a key way that you show your understanding of the topic. Question 3. True or false, academic citation and workplace citation are the same. And that is also false. And the reason for that is that the copyright is different. So an academic citation, and especially when you're citing in university, the context, so we've talked a lot in this class about context, is that the teacher is evaluating your work. So they are trying to figure out what is your words and what is the source's words, and what are your ideas and what are the source's ideas. So the idea that this is the work that you've done on your own in a way that helps you display your learning outcomes is really important. But in the workplace, the copyright is a bit different. So usually your employer holds your copyright. And for that reason, it's kind of seen as all being written by one person. And so in the workplace, it's really common to revise work that somebody else has done, to mash different pieces together without citing. So for example, if I was working in human resources and I needed to post a job for a software engineer, I wouldn't come up with that from scratch, right? I could build on the work of the last time that we hired a software engineer. However, in the workplace, you still are going to give credit. So for example, if someone helped you out in a report, you're going to thank that person. So we still give credit, but citation looks a little bit different. So I want to read you a tweet, and then in the next slide, you'll be invited to reflect on it. And this comes from Jorge J. Rodriguez V, at JJ Rod V. To me, citations are about love and connection. In my citations, you see a story of who I grew with, who I struggled with, who I built with, who I challenged. I do not generate thought alone, and any praxis that stems from my work builds from another. That's love and connection. So praxis is just putting your theory into practical terms. So I want you to set a timer for 3 minutes and then reflect on the quote that you just read. And it's okay if you don't perfectly understand this quote, because that is what we'll be talking about throughout the session. But you can read about this quote and reflect about your own beliefs about giving credit and citing. And you can also write about what you don't understand about the quote. So part of this exercise is working through an idea of somebody else's and helping you to understand it so that you can paraphrase and summarize it. So you'll pause here, set a timer for 3 minutes, and then write about the quote that you just read. And if you want to read that quote again, it is on slide 5 of your interactive lecture, and I'll read it one more time. Jorge J. Rodriguez V, to me, citations are about love and connection. In my citations, you see a story of who I grew with, who I struggled with, who I built with, who I challenged. I do not generate thought alone, and any practice that stems from my work builds from another. That's love and connection. So pause here and take a moment to reflect. So now, let's practice your summarizing and paraphrasing skills. Reread the quote, then write a paragraph that both paraphrases the quote and adds one new thought or idea. So again, when we're paraphrasing, we're restating what the audience, what the source described. And we're basically describing it as if we were describing it to a friend. So if a friend asked what you were doing in class today and you told them about this tweet, you would tell them, here's what this tweet is about. But then I also want you to add one new thought or idea. So this could be an idea, your own opinions about the tweet. This could be something related to the tweet. So we're summarizing and paraphrasing, and then we're building and adding one new idea. So take the time to pause here and practice that now. And again, if you want to see the tweet, it is on slide 7. So we'll come back to the paragraph that you just wrote, but I want to think now about ethical citation. As you can see, citation is about more than avoiding plagiarism. It's about what voices you invite into your work, whose knowledge you value, how you give credit to those who helped you get knowledge, and much more. It's also worth noting that ideas about citation aren't universal. Different cultures have different rules about citation, and different values and beliefs that inform those rules. When you work with sources, you'll have to develop your own ethical ideas around citation. And of course, we're working within the university framework where there are certain things that we have to do, say, to avoid plagiarism, but your ethical practices will be unique to you. So when it comes to balancing sources, one of the trickiest parts of source use is knowing how to balance your own opinions and analysis with the opinions of the source. Before you work with sources, it can be helpful to reflect on what your role is. So how are you being helpful to your reader? So sometimes you can help the reader by summarizing a lot of sources, so the reader doesn't have to read them all. And in that case, your voice is less important, and you'll need to focus on picking out the most important points and summarizing and quoting them in a clear, concise manner. Usually, however, you're being asked to add a new perspective or opinion. You'll build on the source's knowledge and add something new. Sometimes you'll apply general sources to a specific workplace problem. Sometimes you'll use sources to make a persuasive case. Either way, being aware of why you're using sources will help you use them more effectively. So it's not just a matter of saying, I need to use 3 to 5 sources. It's about asking myself, why am I using sources and how am I being helpful to the reader? So let's take a look at 2 unbalanced use of sources and think about how we can improve them. Option 1. After talking to some people, I think we should hire an independent consultant to conduct our anti-racism training. I think that more people would listen to an outsider more easily, and someone said that they would trust an outsider more since they don't participate in any of the politics of the office. Someone else said that if our company pays for training, it will show our commitment to diversity. Option 2. Francine said that we should hire an outside consultant, as did Pedro and Anav. Mary and Xiaoping also agreed. Frank and Bill disagreed. The post, 50 Ways to Improve the Diversity of Your Workforce, says that an outside consultant can also offer a fresh perspective. Another blog post said that an outside consultant wouldn't understand the issues effectively. So, in the first example, the writer wasn't persuasive because they didn't credit any sources and only spoke about their own opinion. Has the writer read any experts? Have they done a survey? Who do they talk to? The reader doesn't know. In the second example, the writer relies too much on sources and doesn't show how the sources relate to each other or provide any context. This is also not persuasive. Note that the balance won't look the same in every piece of work. Sometimes you may need just a few sources to fill the gaps in your knowledge. Other times you'll rely heavily on them. The trick is to understand what your role is and what the source's role is. So let's return to that paragraph that you wrote in the previous activity. I want you to underline every time you rely on the source, and then highlight every time that you use your own ideas. You can also use a different method that is right for you. But the main important part is that I want you to try to separate in some way what are the times that you relied on a source and what are the times when you relied about your own ideas. And then you can think about how balanced does it feel. If you need more analysis, so if you realize that most of your paragraph was paraphrasing the tweet, go ahead and ask and add it. If you think that you didn't really paraphrase the source as much as you needed to, go ahead and do that. And you might want to pause here. So we've thought about the big picture, about ethical citation, about who we cite, why we cite, how we cite. But let's talk about citing in blogs. Your readings taught you about APA citation. An APA citation is great, but it is often more appropriate to academic works. Link citation is what we more commonly use online. So you'll often need to use sources in your blogs, and you should cite in a couple of ways. First of all, you should give credit by mentioning those whose ideas helped you, even if you're not directly referring to them. So for example, if you're writing a makeup blog and you learned how to apply a cut crease from a specific blogger, you can mention the blogger and explain how you've changed and adapted it yourself. You can paraphrase, summarize, and quote sources. So not every blog needs sources, but if you use sources, you should practice paraphrasing, quoting, and summarizing the skills that we've learned. You can cite photos, charts, and graphs. So unless you embed your photos, so for example, if you embed GIFs from Giphy, you should have a copyright to any of the photos that you post on your blog. And so you can find things called Creative Commons photos. So these are photos where the person has given you the right to use these photos on Unsplash, Pexels.com, Pixabay. But if you didn't take the photo or make the chart, you want to make sure that you cite it. So if you took a picture, even if it has a Creative Commons license, you want to tell the reader, here's where this came from. And in the next slide, we are going to talk about how to link to sources. And this also improves your search engine optimization. So it can help people find your work. So you've probably noticed online, again, that most people don't use APA or MLA citation. And instead, they link to their sources. Now, this can be a bit challenging because sometimes the link expires. But the goal here is to write a link that helps the reader to look for more information and see where you got those ideas. So if you've quoted from someone, the reader can go back and find that original quote. And we learned when we were talking about evaluating sources that that's really important in order to build trust with your reader as well. So on slide 12, there's a link to plainlanguage.gov's effective writing links that you might want to consult here for more information, but I'll be summarizing it below. So a link is basically if I've written a sentence, so maybe that sentence is in this article about sustainable development, this person says, quote. So someone wants to read the original article quote in its original context. I can highlight that piece and insert a URL so that the reader can follow that link. So your link should be concise but easy to understand without context. So when it comes to screen readers, so a screen reader is something for people who are visually impaired, the screen reader is going to tell them what that link says. So if you just use a phrase that says click here, the reader doesn't know what they're clicking on. So you wouldn't say click here to read an article, but you might say this article about sustainable agriculture explains more, and then turn the phrase article about sustainable agriculture into a link. And that tells the reader exactly what they're looking at. They're looking at an article about sustainable agriculture. When you create links, you want to avoid using verbs. So for example, let's say that you wanted to create a link in the phrase learn more about sustainable agriculture. If you link to the verb learn more, then your reader doesn't understand the context, learn more about what. But if you link to the phrase sustainable agriculture, then the reader knows what to expect. They know that the link is about sustainable agriculture. If possible, keep your link the same as the page name or document that you're linking to. So for example, if I write the sentence, this policy is important, and I turn this policy into a link, The reader doesn't know what policy that they're going to. But if I say KPU's respectful workplace policy is important, and I turn KPU's respectful workplace policy into a link, then the reader knows exactly what page they're going to. So it's all about giving people information so that they can find your sources and also understand them in context. So let's test your knowledge, because creating links is going to be a challenge, a challenging skill we're going to need to learn. So question one, why is click here not a good link title? A, because it's too short, or B, because it doesn't tell the reader what to expect and it's bad for screen readers? And the answer is B. It's okay to have a concise link, and in fact your link should be concise, but you should tell the reader what to expect. B, and our next question, in the sentence, take this early retirement eligibility quiz, you should link to A, early retirement eligibility quiz, or B, take this. And the answer is A. Remember, we want to avoid putting links on verbs and instead put them on nouns that tell the reader what to expect. So in this citation, this session, you've learned a little bit about ethical citation, how to balance your source use, how to cite in blog posts, and how to create an effective link. Next week, we'll learn how to create an argument using sources.